Radio. Coming up is the news.
Funeral procession is held in Tehran for senior Iranian military advisor in Syria, Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi, who was assassinated by Israel on Monday. The World Health Organization warns that Israel's indiscriminate strikes are causing acute hunger among Gazans as the regime's genocide continues across the country. And Israel steps up its deadly raids across the West Bank as regime forces also storm Palestinians' money exchange shops in the occupied territory.
Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News.
Our top story for the Sapphire Massive funeral ceremony has been held in the Iranian capital for Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi, who was assassinated by Israel on Monday. Thousands of mourners throng the iconic Imam Hussein Square in Tehran to pay their homage to General Mousavi. Senior military commanders and government officials were also present there. Earlier, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, led the funeral prayer for the slain general. Both Tehran and Damascus have denounced the Israeli regime's cowardly airstrike that resulted in the martyrdom of General Mousavi. He was serving as a military advisor in Syria at the official invitation of the Damascus government. Iran has warned that Israel must wait for a response as the country reserves the right to counter the Israeli assassination.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has vowed to take tough revenge on Israel for assassinating a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria. IRGC spokesman Ramazan Sharif made this statement during a press conference held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. He blasted the Monday Israeli missile attack on Damascus that targeted Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi's residence in the Sayed Zainab neighborhood. He also described the assassination as a continuation of Israel's violation of international laws, calling on the international community to stop the crimes of the occupying regime, which endanger international peace and security. When asked about Tel Aviv's motive for committing this heinous crime, Sharif said the regime is seeking to expand its genocidal onslaught on Gaza to the entire West Asia region.
One of the reasons is that the Israeli regime wants to extend the scope of the war beyond the borders of Palestine, and they want to deflect public attention from the Gaza war. The second point, which is important, is that the Israelis try to show off their aerial dominance. Maybe these are the two main reasons because of which the assassination was committed.
The IRGC spokesman warned that Israel must wait for a direct or indirect response as Iran reserves the right to counter the Israeli assassination. He added, the martyrdom of the Iranian commander will usher in a new era where the Zionist regime will be the loser. Sharif also touched upon the U.S. support for Israel, saying Washington is violating international law by funding and backing the regime's crimes in Gaza.
Definitely one of their strategies has been to change the Israel-Palestine conflict to Iran-America conflict. But as the wise leader of the Islamic Revolution said on the first day of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, this operation was launched by Palestinians against Israelis, and the U.S. support for Israel is the reason why the regime continues to exist.
Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi was martyred by Israel while on an advisory mission in Syria.
Truth never dies, and today it's livelier than ever as the world is observing the Israeli crimes with open eyes, conscious minds, and bleeding hearts. No matter what the Israeli regime and its supporters do to divert the global community's attention from its aggression on Gaza, the whole world are unanimously calling for justice for Palestinians. Bahti Abbasian, Tehran.
Political commentator Scott Bennett says the Israeli assassination of Brigadier General Seyed Razi Mousavi is a brazen violation of international law. Let's take a listen.
It's obviously a violation of international law. It's the sign of a desperate regime, of course, that is losing its grip on reality, and a political disintegration of the Israeli government is occurring before our eyes. Netanyahu is becoming increasingly paranoid and delusional and really decaying like Hitler in the last days of World War II. So it doesn't surprise me that they react with such maniacal exasperation and desperation. I think they're desperate to try and pull and distract people's attention away from the crimes that they themselves are committing in Gaza. But of course, you're seeing the rest of the world stand up too. You're seeing the Houthis heroically marching tens of thousands of people towards the Israeli borders.
The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza says Israel has committed 16 massacres in a matter of 24 hours as the regime presses ahead with its genocide across the territory. The ministry spokesman says the regime's indiscriminate strikes have killed at least 196 civilians and injured 325 others during that period. The attacks included an airstrike on a residential building near Al-Amal Hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis, killing nearly 30 people. Hamas strongly condemned the attack, calling it a horrific massacre. It said Israel's barbaric attacks were only meant to give an image of victory to its defeated army. At least 17 people were also killed in Israeli strikes on the city of Deir al-Bala and then Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza Strip. The attacks came as the World Health Organization warned of acute hunger and severe risk of disease in the besieged territory.
Today, I repeat my call on the international community to take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing the population of Gaza and jeopardizing the ability of humanitarian workers to help people with terrible injuries, acute hunger, and at severe risk of disease.
The WHO chief also warned that the population of Gaza is in, quote, grave peril. The world body says its ability to supply medicines, medical supplies, and fuel to hospitals is being increasingly constrained by the hunger and desperation of people en route to and within hospitals. More than 21,100 people, mostly women and children, have been killed since the start of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza on October the 7th. Israel's 2.4 million people are suffering from severe shortages of water, food, fuel, and medicines, with only limited aid entering the territory, according to UN figures. An estimated 1.9 million Gazans have also been displaced since then. Our correspondent in Gaza has interviewed the victims of Israel's indiscriminate attacks on the besieged territory. They gave horrific eyewitness accounts of the ordeal they went through. Let's take a listen.
Around 30 individuals, mostly women and children from the evacuees, were inside the house when it was attacked by the Israeli missiles. A huge explosion took place that left all of us wounded or killed. Our neighbor's house was leveled to the ground as well, and the people inside the house were massacred. We were all civilians, and we went to that house after our original house was destroyed 2 weeks ago, leaving my brother killed.
We were all civilians residing in our house. All of a sudden, a massive explosion took place. We didn't know what happened. A couple of hours later, I was pulled out from the rubble along with my wife and my daughter. We suffered severe injuries. I was devastated when I was informed that 15 people of my family members were killed then. Many of them were under the rubble. I don't know for what reason we were targeted.
I was sleeping in my house with my family. A shocking explosion took place. I didn't know what happened. I woke up in the hospital and I found my leg was amputated, and I found three of my grandsons were killed. Our residential square was completely destroyed. We are suffering. We don't even get the needed medical care. We don't know when this nightmare will end.
I was inside our house. Suddenly, multiple explosions took place and targeted several houses in our square. I didn't know what happened. I found myself in the hospital. They told me that 30 of my neighbors were massacred and some of them are still under the rubble, and it is pretty difficult to get them out. These massacres must stop. We are all civilians. We didn't do anything.
Palestinian resistance fighters inflict more losses on the Israeli military as the regime presses ahead with its onslaught against Gaza. Qassam Brigade says it has hit multiple Israeli armored vehicles and installations across the Gaza Strip, killing and wounding several IOF soldiers in northern Gaza. A missile raid was conducted on an Israeli helicopter. Also in Jabalia, two Israeli tanks were hit. Meanwhile, Al-Quds Brigades, the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, says it has struck an Israeli settlement in the occupied Palestinian territories. The Israeli military has confirmed the deaths of three soldiers in the Gaza Strip on Wednesday. The regime says 167 of its soldiers have been killed in the ground invasion of Gaza so far. It says over 500 Israeli occupation forces soldiers have been killed since October the 7th, but Hamas says the Israeli military is underreporting its fatalities and that the number is much higher. Israel ramps up its deadly raids across the occupied West Bank while at the same time pressing ahead with its genocidal war on Gaza. And there are fresh attack. The regime forces targeted the city of Ramallah, killing one Palestinian and injuring at least 15 others. Nine Palestinians were also injured during a separate raid on the town of Halhul near the city of Al-Khalil. Regime forces abducted two Palestinians there. One person also reportedly injured in an Israeli attack in the northern city of Nablus. Israeli forces have raided the city of Jenin and its refugee camp as well. Apart from raiding homes, occupation forces this time stormed Palestinians' money exchange shops, taking possession of about $2.5 million after detaining their owners. The regime forces and settlers have killed at least 313 Palestinians and abducted hundreds more in the West Bank since October the 7th, the day when Israel launched its bloody onslaught on Gaza. Mona Kandil is joining us now from Ramallah with all the latest updates regarding the recent Israeli raids that are taking place all over the West Bank. Mona?
Well, as you were explaining, it seems that the Israeli military is claiming that the main aim of tonight's and early raids to several areas across the occupied West Bank were meant to shut down money exchange shops in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military claimed that, according to Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, Yoav Gallant, they decided or designated five Palestinian money exchange businesses and shops as terrorist organizations here in the occupied West Bank because they transfer funds to both Palestinian movements, Hamas, and the Jihad movement. The Israeli military revealed, according to Israeli army radio, they said that they stormed the cities of Ramallah and Al-Biri, Halhul in Al-Khalil, Jenin, as well as Atil in Nablus, Al-Biri, of course, and they shut down nine shops and nine money exchange shops. Those are the branches of the five main offices, according to the Israeli military. The Israeli military confiscated $2.8 million U.S. dollars, as well as they had confiscated documents, telephones, and recording devices and safes, according to the Israeli military. And they had arrested the owners and workers, let's say, in these shops. 21 Palestinians had been detained from the cities of Nablus, Ramallah, Al-Biri, Halhul, and Jenin.
All right, thanks a lot. Mona Kandil joining us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. The Turkish president has lashed out at Israel over the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza and destruction of the besieged territory. Recep Tayyip Erdogan says there's no difference between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Nazi Germany's leader Adolf Hitler. When he made the comments while addressing a ceremony in the capital Ankara, Erdogan also criticized the West's support for Israel, stressing that Western countries backing Israel are complicit in the regime's war crimes. He added that Turkey is ready to welcome academics and scientists who face persecution due to their views on the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Erdogan had previously called Netanyahu the butcher of Gaza, accusing him of actions bordering genocide. He has also described Israel as a terrorist entity, calling for Netanyahu to be prosecuted by an international war crimes tribunal. Nearly 3 months of Israel's massacres in Gaza is pushing even the regime's closest allies to call for a halt to the genocide taking place across the blockaded territory. Now the French president has called for what he described as a lasting ceasefire in Gaza. Emmanuel Macron was speaking in a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The French president said his country will work in the coming days in cooperation with Jordan to carry out humanitarian operations in Gaza. Macron expressed his deepest concern about civilian deaths and the humanitarian situation in Gaza. He also called for measures to end Israeli settlers' violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and prevent construction of recently planned settlements. Macron's comments come as Paris has been a staunch ally of Tel Aviv for decades, providing the regime with unlimited financial and military aid. Well, the Islamic resistance in Iraq has targeted a U.S. base near the Erbil International Airport in the Kurdistan region. The resistance group said the drone attack came in response to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, which is backed by Washington. The group vowed to continue with such retaliatory operations. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement also launched retaliatory missile attacks on Israeli targets near the border with Lebanon in support of the Palestinians. Sirens were sounded in Galilee and Rosh Hanikra in the northern parts of occupied Palestine. Israeli media said two were killed in the settlement of Kiryat Shemona by missiles that were fired from South Lebanon. Meanwhile, Hezbollah said that it has targeted a tent housing Israeli troops near Al-Zahira base. Using missiles, the attack left a number of troops killed or injured. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. When it comes to nominating contests, more than half of U.S. Democrats and Republicans said they were not confident their party would choose a candidate who could win the 2024 presidential election. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Associated Press has covered this story and tells us more. According to a new survey, a possible rematch between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump is not exciting the American public. The Associated Press NORC Research Center poll published recently found that 56% of U.S. adults overall, regardless of party affiliation, would be very or somewhat dissatisfied with Biden as a Democratic presidential nominee. On the other side, about 58% said the same thing about Donald Trump being the potential GOP nominee. About 3 in 10 U.S. adults, or 28%, said they would be dissatisfied with both Donald Trump and Joe Biden becoming the nominee, with independents, 43%, more likely than Democrats, 28%, or Republicans, 20%, to express displeasure with both politicians clinching to their party nominations. However, pollsters found more Republicans are more satisfied with Donald Trump leading the ticket than Democrats are satisfied with Joe Biden leading their ticket. Almost half, or 49% of Democrats, said they would be very or somewhat satisfied with the incumbent as their party's nominee, while 65% of Republicans said the same thing about the former president, Donald Trump. When it comes to the nominating contest, less than half of Democrats and Republicans said they were confident their party would choose a candidate who could win the general election in November. The poll found about 29% of Democrats said they are very or extremely confident their party will choose a winning nominee, while 33% of Republicans said the same. Negativity around the 2024 election doesn't appear to be limited to the presidential candidates either. Roughly 68% of those surveyed said they are pessimistic about the state of politics in the United States as a whole. Republicans are more pessimistic than Democrats that their party's primary votes will be accurately counted, with about 37% saying they have a great deal of confidence. A majority of Democrats, 72%, said the same thing about their party. Opinion polls' findings come as Donald Trump and Joe Biden appear to be on their way to clinching their party's nominations, just weeks before the primary season kicks off with the Iowa caucus. Donald Trump has maintained a strong lead in the polls since announcing his re-election bid, despite facing four criminal inducements and a civil fraud trial in New York. While Democrats don't appear enthused about Joe Biden as their prospective nominee, his primary challengers have struggled to gain significant momentum. According to a new survey, Donald Trump is leading President Biden in seven swing states, dealing the latest blow to Biden's re-election campaign just weeks ahead of the start of the primary voting season. The opinion poll published recently from Morning Consult and Bloomberg News Agency found Joe Biden is trailing the former President Donald Trump by an average of 5.28 percentage points in the seven swing states surveyed. The states of North Carolina, Georgia, Wisconsin, Nevada, Michigan, Arizona, and Pennsylvania. Donald Trump held his strongest lead over Joe Biden in North Carolina with 11 percentage points, followed by Georgia, 7%. The former president is leading in Wisconsin by 6% and in Nevada by 5%, according to the pollsters. His smallest leads are in Michigan and Arizona, leading by 4% and 3% respectively. The results are from a hypothetical ballot that includes party frontrunners, Biden and Trump, as well as third-party candidates like Robert Kennedy Jr., Corwell West, and Jill Stein. There was also an option for participants to choose an unlisted candidate or answer "don't know, no opinion," or choose to forgo voting altogether. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had support from roughly 1 in 10 voters across the swing states, while 1% to 2% of voters in each state supported Colonel West. 1% to 3% of voters supported Jill Stein, and 1% to 3% supported a candidate not on the ballot. Pollsters said when the third-party candidates are taken off the ballot, Donald Trump continues to lead Joe Biden in all seven swing states, though Georgia's race comes within a margin of error of 6 percentage points. The survey also found that Donald Trump secured more support from respondents when looking at the economy. However, when it comes to the issue of health care, Joe Biden has a slight lead over the former president in five of the swing states, namely Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. According to the survey, Donald Trump still leads on the issue in Georgia and North Carolina. British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump is extending his lead over U.S. President Joe Biden as the contours of next year's presidential election come into focus. Trump may face legal jeopardy as he battles a string of court cases, but he now leads Joe Biden by 4 percentage points in the latest Daily Mail J.L. Partners opinion poll. The results show the former president winning over independent voters, while Joe Biden has seen his support fall within his own party and among women. The numbers will reignite debate about whether or not Biden, 81 years old, can generate enough excitement around Democrats to make good on his promise that he is the best candidate to beat Donald Trump, 77 years old. And it comes after a separate Daily Mail opinion poll showed he was losing to Donald Trump in 2 out of 3 key battleground states. To look at the overall national picture, JL Partners surveyed 984 likely voters using landline and cell phone calls, as well as SMS messages and smartphone apps. When asked who they would vote for if the election were tomorrow, 40% of respondents picked Donald Trump, and 36% of respondents chose Joe Biden. Independents Robert Kennedy Jr. and Cornel West won 4% and 1% respectively, while Green candidate Jill Stein's share was around 0%. That leaves a lot to play for. Some 18% said they were still undecided or wanted a different candidate. And the poll went into the field before Colorado's Supreme Court added another twist, disqualifying the former President Donald Trump from the state's Republican primary. Even so, James Johnson, the co-founder of JL Partners, claimed that Donald Trump was on the up and up. He said, "Voters might think that Trump is guilty of the charges that have been put to him, including a sizable chunk of Republicans, but his record in his first term in office means he's still attracting support." James Johnson added, "But look closer and it becomes clear that Donald Trump's lead is more because of Biden's weakness than Trump's strength. Biden has taken a particular hit among 18 to 29-year-old women and suffers from low enthusiasm among black people too. There is also a big chunk of undecideds, 1 in 10 of Biden's 2020 voters who might not like Biden but can't bring themselves to vote for Donald Trump. Biden has struggled with questions about his age and voters continue to say that they're worried about the economy under his stewardship. In contrast, Donald Trump seems not to have suffered from indictments in 4 criminal cases during the past year. Whether a conviction would finally strip away his non-stick coating remains to be seen.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. So far, the Israeli regime has failed to achieve its initial war objectives, including releasing captives held in Gaza and the annihilation of the Palestinian resistance. Now, new analysis by a number of U.S. intelligence agencies reveals that the popularity and influence of Hamas has dramatically increased since October the 7th. Hamas is now increasingly viewed as the only group actually doing something to counter the Israeli occupation. At the same time, Israel is facing more retaliatory attacks from resistance groups in other countries, including Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon. Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst, who's joining us from Brussels. And also we have human rights activist Mr. Mohsen Naghvi, who's joining us from Houston, Texas. Well, gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Magnier in Brussels. Resolution 2720 was adopted at the UN Security Council following multiple delays and other shenanigans by the U.S., which vetoed the draft. They were alleging objections to the wording suspension of hostilities. The U.S. also, as you saw earlier, vetoed the Russian bid to add the word ceasefire to the text. What do you make of the insistence of the U.S. on the wording used in this resolution, which was strongly criticized by Russia? And overall, do you see the adoption of this resolution as being too little, too late?
Thank you for having me. There are many points to highlight here. First of all, Israel is not yet ready for the ceasefire and hasn't achieved its objective, which is to destroy Gaza and ideally force an exodus not only to the south of Gaza, but also to Egypt and outside the Gaza Strip. This plan is still on the table, and there are negotiations with Egypt that haven't stopped so far, and this is the biggest fear of the Palestinian population, to see another exodus. Secondly, the Americans are protecting Israel regardless the humanitarian aspect, rejecting a ceasefire for the second time and being completely isolated of the rest of the world that is calling for a ceasefire. This is an indication that this system at the United Nations and the world system that many countries and nations put in place is no longer functioning, because one single country is opposing humanitarian support and the cessation of hostility and the killing of children and women in Gaza. This is unacceptable, and it's further contributing to the double standard of the United Nations and showing that it is not the world leader that it deserves to be, and it is a power that needs to step down and no longer be recognized. This cannot continue, because that means the Americans are fully complice with what the Israelis are doing in regard to crime against humanity, war crimes, and genocide.
Mohsen Naghvi in Houston, a new analysis that we just read by U.S. intelligence agencies has shown that Hamas's credibility and influence has grown dramatically in the 2 months since the October 7th operations and the onset of Israel's war on Gaza. Is this another aspect of this war that the Israelis have failed in?
Absolutely. We've seen the popularity of all resistance factions in Palestine increase ever since this war started. They're being seen as a Palestinian resistance force rather than an individual group now. They have become more or less heroes. And the main reason for this has been the prisoner exchange. Hamas is a popular movement, a popular government in Gaza, whereas in West Bank, even if they were voices or narratives that were against the resistance factions, now they don't exist. They have definitely decreased, because people are meeting their loved ones after years and years now. So initially, after the first ceasefire, the predicament that the Zionist regime was in was that if they do a ceasefire and there's a prisoner exchange, they are rectifying one of the major objectives that they had from this war, and that was to finish and obliterate Hamas or other Palestinian resistances. But now, with the results that the Palestinians are seeing, we see an increasing rise in the support of Islamic Jihad, Hamas, and other resistance factions, because they are seeing results.
Sure, Mr. Magnus, since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught on Palestinians in Gaza, the Israeli regime has sought to dismantle that. Those were the initial objectives that they had presented, that they sought to dismantle resistance groups in Gaza. However, after 77 days of lethal and deadly attacks by the Israeli war machine, Palestinian resistance groups are fighting back strong, both inside and outside of Gaza. So that means that the Israelis have not achieved their military objectives. So the question is, other than systematically murdering children and systematically targeting the health sector, what have the Israelis achieved?
The Israeli announced an unachievable objectives from the first beginning to defeat Hamas and to release all the prisoners. Many Israeli officials, among these former Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Barak, said Hamas is an ideology and cannot be defeated. Also, we heard the another Israeli former Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, saying exactly the same thing. So this is not an objective that the Israeli government can achieve. Secondly, we have seen how the Israelis failed to release any prisoner. On the contrary, they are firing on their people, and they have killed so far 22 or 23 of the prisoners, and it is shown that it is impossible to release any of these prisoners by military force. This is what takes us to another point, that Israel's real objective is not to defeat Hamas, because Netanyahu is not that stupid, and certainly not to release the prisoners, because he prefers to have dead prisoners rather than alive, so he doesn't negotiate with Hamas and he doesn't pay the price very high at the end of the war. So his objective is to destroy Gaza. He has managed to destroy two-thirds of the north and a third of the south. On television, the Israeli army is showing us how they are completely destroying entire neighborhood of 50 buildings, and then they go with bulldozers and they change the geography of Gaza totally. So that is one of the objectives. The second objective is something that the Israelis have always said overtly, that the children, the Palestinian children, represent a demographic danger for the existence of Israel. Therefore, they should be killed and they should be eliminated. This is what many extremist Israelis are coming out on television saying, that we need to kill their children, women. And this is what Benjamin Netanyahu evoked when he called upon Amalek, which is historically calling for the killing of children and women of all those who are persecuting the Jews. Therefore, these are the main objectives of Israel in this war. And with the support of the Americans, the Israelis are receiving enough ammunition to continue bombing Gaza and to try and achieve the undeclared objectives.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Mr. Nahvi, along the lines of what Mr. Magnier was just talking about, the destruction that the Israelis have brought upon Gaza, the political bureau chief of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, he has rejected the Israeli claim that post-war Gaza will not be governed by the resistance group or by any Palestinian group for that matter. What do you think will happen when this massacre ends? Just like the expert data that Mr. Magnier was talking about, the relentless airstrikes and shelling have destroyed two-thirds of all structures in northern Gaza and a quarter in the south. Are the Israelis ensuring that there's nothing left of Gaza to govern at all?
Destruction of... History shows us that destruction of infrastructure does not dictate the victory of either party. The destruction of infrastructure, the loss of life on ground, does not dictate or doesn't really show us that Israel will be able to fully capture Gaza. The only way that Gaza can fully be captured by Israel is if the resistance there ends. If the resistance factions in Gaza are unable to attack. Now, we've seen a few days back that the Golani, one of the most elite brigades of the Zionist regime, the Golani Brigade, they had to flee for their lives because they're being obliterated by Hamas. The warfare that we are seeing now is unprecedented. It hasn't been seen before. The Israeli regime is surrounded from different sides. They have entered Gaza. They have entered Gaza, but they had underestimated the Palestinian resistance, the abilities and the capabilities of the Palestinian resistance forces. They are in their terrain. And we've seen that over 140 Israeli soldiers have been killed in Gaza. In Gaza, they've been killed. So and mainstream media is not reporting the loss of life of IDF soldiers that are happening in Gaza at this point. The resistance in terms of engagement with the Zionist regime is winning. If one was to ask, what damage has Israel imposed upon the resistance forces in Palestine, we will say none. The only thing that has happened is that the abilities, the capabilities, and the popularity of the resistance has increased and is becoming widespread all over Palestine now. So this genocide that the Zionist regime has committed on Gaza, the only thing that has happened from this is that the will of the Palestinians has increased. When you leave a people with no choice, they fight till their death. And we will only see the resistance forces strengthen in the future after this onslaught, and we will see the Zionist regime further weaken in the region.
Elijah Magnier, talking about the resistance in the region. How important has the unified response been from the resistance in the region? There's Lebanon's Hezbollah, there's Yemen's Ansar al-Islam resistance movement, and the armed forces of the country. Resistance groups in Syria have also carried out operations against Israel and the United States positions. And of course, in Iraq, an Islamic resistance group carried out an attack on a major Israeli port in retaliation for the war on Gaza. That was the first time that an Iraq-based group targeted Israeli positions since this war started. When there's talk of warnings and of a wider war in the region, are the Israelis and Washington not considering the repercussions of a coordinated and unified response from all resistance fronts in the region?
This is a very important question and need to be clarified. From the first beginning, all the friends of the Palestinian resistance in Gaza tried their best to support the Palestinian children and women and to support the Palestinian cause. Hezbollah has attracted a third of the Israeli army on the borders and has lost over 100 men with the destruction of between 1,500 to 2,000 houses. Now, there is war going on the borders with Lebanon and is not stopping. However, the Israelis did not turn toward Lebanon and forgot about Gaza. Therefore, whatever Hezbollah is doing, it is not diverting the attention of the Israelis from Gaza, but is doing something very important that is not diverting the world attention from the Palestinian cause. And also all the other members of the axis of the resistance, or the friend of the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, are also contributing effectively, mainly Ansarullah in Yemen, by escalating gradually and sending first drones and then with missiles, but having all the Americans, the French, the British, and the Germans on the way in the Red Sea, downing these missiles and drones, forced Ansarullah to look for another alternative, which is to stop any shipment that going to Israel or Israeli ships. That was an excellent move that forced all the commercial maritime companies to go toward Africa and impose a long tour that is affected the Israeli economy. However, it is not stopping Israel's war, and Israel continue on the same pace. Today we have seen something completely different, which indicates the escalation, the gradual escalation of the axis of the resistance and the friend of the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, when the Iraqis announced that they've sent a drone against an energy platform of the Israelis in the Mediterranean. So we understand that the all the resistance groups need to think about the second step to continue imposing gradually pressure not only on Israel, but above all on the Americans, so they understand that this war is going to cost everybody a lot, not only the Palestinians, and it can enlarge to a proportion where it will be difficult to be contained. So far, all these steps did not convince the Israelis to stop the attack and the indiscriminate bombing of Gaza. Therefore, I expect to see even further, more harsher steps from the resistance in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon,
right,
and in Yemen to support Gaza.
Mohsen Naqvi, a very important development in the region was the Yemeni armed forces, which were targeting Israeli-linked ships and vessels bound for the occupied territories. The Yemeni army has vowed to continue its operations despite the formation of the U.S.-led naval coalition in the Red Sea. And they've said that those attacks will persist until Israel ends its crimes against Gazans. Tell us more about the defiant message that the Yemenis are sending to the U.S. and its allies.
The reason why Yemen's actions are so significant is because it's not just the Ansarullah who are taking these preemptive measures, but it is rather the Yemeni nation that is taking these measures. As Sayyid Nasrullah also mentioned, that the reason why Yemen is so important is because, unlike Hezbollah, the entire intelligentsia, the equipment, the military arsenal of a country is at the hands of Ansarullah. So the reason why this is so important is because Yemen has proven to support the Palestinians and to fight against the Zionist forces, no matter what the circumstances are. They have independently chosen to go on head first with the US, with these so-called European powers. So this escalation of war, or this pressure that the Yemenis are creating on the Red Sea, may that be a military pressure, or may that be an economic pressure, is something unprecedented that we have never seen before. So the message that it is giving to the U.S. is that U.S.-supported Saudi-backed army tried to conquer Yemen, and they failed. They were bombarded, just like the Gazans are being bombarded right now, but their sense of resistance and the dedication to their resistance won that war. Similarly, no matter what happens, just like they fought the Saudis, they have announced that they will fight all powers in the region or outside the region, who will support Israel in this genocide that they are committing in Gaza? So they, their stance is very clear. There is no diplomacy on part of the Yemenis. They are fully, they've taken the bull by the horns, and they are fully engaged in this war with everything that they have. So the message that they're giving is that no matter what, they will not back down from supporting Palestinian resistance and fight against the Zionist regime with whatever they have.
Elijah Magnier, regarding the issue of accountability or any form of action to stop this bloodshed, the likes of the ICC and the ICJ, they can't do anything. The United Nations Security Council, as we've seen, has proven to be insufficient, and it won't do anything. Does this expose the lack of a proper mechanism to deal with situations like this? And after this devastating massacre ends, how can the issue of accountability begin to take shape?
There's no accountability for Israel. That has been going on for the last 75 years. The Israelis have not committed for the first time crimes against humanity and war crimes and genocide and imposed ethnic cleansing on the Palestinians. It has been going on for decades, and Israel is not accountable for many reasons. The first and above all is the support of the United States on all international theater. Therefore, we should not expect any reaction from the international community that is extremely shy in condemning Israel for its ongoing actions today, killing 12,000 children and women, and nobody is moving, and nobody is taking serious step to say to Israel, stop this slaughtering of the civilian. Also, Israel is not a member of the ICC, and every time there are warnings or a question of justice system in Europe asking to interrogate one of the Israeli officials, as soon as they land in any European country, they are asked to return, but they are never arrested. So I don't think we need to count on the international community to render Israel accountable, because Israel is not accountable.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier joining us from Brussels, and Mr. Mohsen Naghvi, human rights activist, joining us from Houston, Texas. Thank you for contributing to the program, and also thanks to you for staying with us on Spotlight.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
النقي means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
السلام عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. He was the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. He was the divinely appointed trustee. He was the divinely appointed rightful successor, and he was the divinely appointed Khalifatullah for the Muslims. We find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the only representative at the forefront of the opposition to the rule of the corrupt Abbasid caliphs. He was one of the prominent leaders of the Muslim Ummah who struggled against tyranny and oppression. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam took a brave and unwavering position against the tyrannical kings of his age. He did not associate with any of them. Rather, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam preferred to stay away from these tyrannical kings. And therefore, these kings held grudges and an enmity against Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, and they inflicted him with severity and violence, ultimately leading to the martyrdom of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.
Parts of Ziyara text of Jamaatul Kabira issued by Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immat al-huda wa masabih al-tuja wa a'lam al-tuqa wa dawilluha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's Prophet, and the progeny of Allah's Messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat al-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.